Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now, to what I've been thinking for quite some time is one of the most significant issues facing most of us, time. More particularly, the shortage of it because of the busyness of life. My next guest says it's a time bomb, the author of a book by that very title, released this week from the Centre for Work and Life at the University of South Australia. I reckon it's a really important wake-up call for most Australians, workers and bosses. The cost of it all at so many levels, health, family, even our future, it's all too great for us to go on ignoring. Barbara Pocock says we've become like the frog in boiling water. 5 years ago, she and her colleagues set out to ask Australians about their working lives, and she says the issue of time jumped off the page. Let's talk with Barbara Pocock. She joins us now from Adelaide. Barbara, welcome to Open House.
Hello, Lee.
How surprised were you to learn of the magnitude of this problem, the depth of it, and the challenge of it?
Well, as you said, I've been working with my colleagues, Natalie Skinner and Philippa Williams, for some years, collecting a whole lot of different sorts of data, big surveys and lots of interviews with men, women and children. And when we sat down to sort of think, what are we really hearing from these people and from Australians in a wide range of occupations about their lives and their working lives and the relationship between work and the rest of life, the issue of time just jumped out from so many different angles. And it is partly about the hours that people work. And, of course, we have a lot of part-time workers in Australia, but we also have a growing and large number of people who do long hours. So the hours total is really important. But we also have a lot of households now where there isn't just one person working a full-time job. We've got 1.5 earners in so many households now where there are children present. We've also got a change in the nature of work, with a lot of people feeling like more is asked of their working hour than was perhaps 5 or 10 years ago. So there's an intensification happening. And then the holidays issue and the ability to get time off through flexible work arrangements also. So the book shows that really quite a number of Australian workers struggle to get a holiday every year. And, of course, a lot of casual workers aren't entitled to a paid holiday beyond a leave loading, which is meant to help them get a holiday, but a lot of casuals don't take a holiday. But we've also got a problem with a lot of full-time workers unable to take their holidays because of pressure of work. So it's a really complicated story. There's lots of people who manage it reasonably well, but a significant proportion of workers feel under pressure, both at work and in putting together the work with their home life as well.
You mentioned flexibility in the workplace. I would have thought that that might be a good thing for the management of our time. Mm.
Terribly important. If you are in an inflexible job, then that is undoubtedly a negative for you, whether you've got children or not. Workers with flexibility, and particularly with a first-line supervisor, an immediate boss, who, when you need it, understands that you need to come into work late or leave early or whatever, or need to swap your hours around, that's incredibly important and can be very, very helpful. Lots of Australian workers don't have that basic kind of flexibility. But there's another problem related to that flexibility, and that is if you've got a job with a very big set of demands in it, just too much work for one person to reasonably manage, what we pick up from our research is that the flexibility enables an expansive job, a job that grows out into your hours beyond the workplace and certainly grows into the home or sends you home with a lot of spillover onto your household. So flexibility is a very, very great tool, but it can be a very hard taskmaster if your job isn't under control in the first place.
Like the instance of the soccer mum that you refer to.
Mm. Yes, we have one story, and there are a lot of stories through the book on all kinds of issues, but one striking quote, I think, was from a woman who said, "I'm so lucky I work in a workplace where I can whiz out at 3 o'clock, get my child from school, run him to the soccer game, and then come back to work and, you know, pick up where I left off and try and make up for the time I took out." And I think when we look at those kinds of stories, and that's not an uncommon kind of trying to hold it all together and juggle things. What we find, for example, working mothers, 7 out of 10 working mothers in Australia say they are often or almost always rushed and pressed for time. So it's great you can whiz out to the soccer, but you pick up a penalty for that in terms of the feelings of stress and pressure that you have around holding all that stuff together.
And you say this is a particular problem for women.
It's a problem for mothers in particular, where the work time pressures and stress are very intense. But men are not immune. We find a lot of fathers of preschoolers also have a lot of pressure and stress, and their hours are actually increasing on average in recent years. But it's actually not a real protection, even if you work part-time. We find a lot of part-time women in particular still picking up all the domestic work at home, trying to hold down a job, say, 3 days a week, and have high expectations of themselves, and a lot is expected of them from their boss, but also their family. You know, you only work 3 days a week, should be able to do it all.
And this is at a time when, for many families, this is the peak time in raising their children.
Yes, we often find that those long hours of work and intensive family responsibilities cut in the 30s, and mean that, you know, in a household, for example, when a first baby arrives, the woman often reduces her hours. I mean, some men take time out too, but it is a surprisingly small number who take extended periods of paid parental leave. So it's mostly women. Step back from the labour market, big cut to the household budget. Father becomes nervous about staying sweet with his boss at work, doesn't want to become insecure, lose his job would be disastrous at that moment. So do a bit of extra time and those hours grow for a lot of fathers of preschoolers. So it's a pretty heady mix there. Lots of dads want to be involved with their children, but they find it's a moment when the mortgage is big, they want to be secure in their workplace. And it's not only, of course, all around children. We've got a growing proportion of aged Australians, and we've got more care and time that we want to give and need to give to our ageing parents or friends. And that's a time in the book that really shows up as quite pressured as well. So it's all kinds of care that we really need to be defending so that we can do a job and keep employment over the life cycle in a reasonable way, but also do the care that we need to and want to as well.
Yes. And you say this busyness is not just confined to adults, but to young people and children as well. Yeah. How young is that and what's happening with them?
Well, we've got quite a section in the book about teenagers, because I think what we have done in the last couple of decades is really try, we've focused a lot on young children, on a really important issue of quality childcare for our infant children, for example, many of whom, you know, at 1 year old and two are in public care, so we really need good carers there. We need that care available at an accessible and reasonable price. But we've also got some real issues for our teenagers. Lots of our teenagers in Australia are taking on work themselves. Many of their parents, both mother and father, or a sole mother or father, are in employment. And if they're in a household on the outer edges of some of our big cities, as of course many new families are, as they try and find affordable housing, there's a real issue for the support and transport and employment and social connection of our teenagers in this changing world of work. So putting together their own job with a reasonable access to education and their social life relies on good transport, and that often means having a parent around and a parent with a car or good public transport. So I think especially for disadvantaged suburbs and low-income households, getting that spatial fit of those things for teenagers is really... We don't understand enough what's going on there, and I think there's some significant issues for our teenagers in outer suburbia.
Yes, that social life for them, and also for that matter for many, many adults today, includes social media and the whole march of technology. Mm. What role does that play in this time bomb?
I think it's very important. And not just for those teenagers, as we know, that they're very, very active on all of those media, but so are a growing proportion of our workforce who are using all kinds of technologies in different ways and really transforming our work practices in many jobs. And we've now got a workforce where 3/4 of us work in a service sector job. We might be in the health system, we might be in education, we might be in retail or hospitality, but that's where the jobs are in the majority now. We're not in a blue-collar environment in the same proportion as we used to be. Well, of course, there are still plenty of blue-collar workers. What the technologies do for those professional and managerial and service sector jobs is they kind of just breach the boundary of the job. So there's not a time or a space boundary around it. You can work at night, early in the morning, when you're on a public transport. That can be incredibly liberating and helpful, but it can also take a lot of your time in your household and allow the job to reach out and beyond the workplace and grow those working hours again.
It's probably too simplistic just to blame the boss, because we're all often exercising our own choices and preferences, including technology. There was that economist I quoted who says we're quite happy to work longer for we get more out of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's just about the boss being wrong, but I do think there are bosses who, employers, workplaces that are really leaning on their workforce pretty hard to really increase productivity, to get more done in an hour. And we've stopped, I think, being thoughtful about the hidden costs of those long hours for productivity, for the bottom line, for safety and for health. And I think those hidden costs really need to be better understood. They're certainly an impost on our health budget. I've got no doubt about that. People who consistently work long hours, for example, for extended periods, are very likely to have higher levels of depression and cardiovascular illness, for example. So I think it is about the management and the way we manage, but also we need good labour law, which makes long and unsafe hours, it makes it wrong to require that, and especially given so many of those hours are unpaid. We need good labour law, and we need good care systems, the availability of support and flexibility at work. It's a mixture of changes we need.
There is quite a strong sense at the moment in terms of our national identity of the virtue of work, that it's almost reflecting our moral worth, that this is what we're worth. This is our identity.
Yeah, I think that's true. And there always was, of course, a sort of that notion of the Protestant work ethic being quite a significant part of Western and Australian identity. I think we now have policymakers who talk about, and Julia Gillard does, talks about the decent, hard-working Australian and how important work is to be that kind of citizen. And I think we all get that to a certain extent, but it used to be that work was our servant. It was our instrument. It wasn't an end in itself. And I think it's a bit of a stretch now to putting work so centrally to our notion of ourselves and what a good person is. I think we should be viewing work as a means to an end, not the end in itself. And I think we also should really recognise the important contributions that people do outside the paid labour market, carers, mothers, parents, fathers. So important, not earning an income, but over the life cycle, most of us are going to have some kind of care responsibility, and we should be able to fit it with a decent job.
It's a very vital point. Okay, so you've been comprehensive in identifying the problems. What are the solutions at a personal level? So we've covered the national agenda, the law, legislation. For each of us, how might we manage our life better?
Well, that is the big question. I think we do a lot of talk in Australia and in our social lives about work-life balance and, you know, who's got it together. And a lot of us imagine everyone else has got it together and we're just the one father in the street who's always rushing. I don't think that that is a real reading. I think a lot of people are rushed and feeling pressed and just managing when intensive care and work responsibilities coincide in particular. So I think that kind of mythical, clever individual is a bit overplayed in our conversation. We really do need to pay attention to, you know, issues that we have no control over that can drive a truck through work-life balance, like a sick child or a bad boss. So I think as individuals, finding a workplace, and there are things we can do as individuals, getting a workplace with the hours that suit you and your household at the stage of life that you're at is incredibly important and will definitely make a positive impact on work-life interference. Getting an employer and a supervisor who really understand your needs and have a genuine reciprocal relationship with you around flexibility. So it's not all that the boss needs you at this time. It's also a bit of, and this is what I need, and can we negotiate that? And I think the other thing that really comes through in the book is getting a good fit between where your job, your home, and the services that you need, whether it be a school or a university or whatever, are in some kind of decent alignment. And that's easily said, but difficult to do in a lot of our suburbs.
To cut down the commute.
The commute is deadly. You know, it's dead time. People don't like commuting. They find it wasted time. And so, of course, it has an environmental impact if you're in a car. So I think there are a lot of good reasons for really looking at the spatial organisation of our cities. And as authors, we're trying to draw that out in the book as well.
You would recognise the toughness of some of these decisions, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, money determines where you buy a house more than many other factors for a lot of us. And, you know, reaching for a house on the outskirts of Melbourne is a lot more doable for people than an inner city house near your job. But there are big impacts on children in households, and especially mothers in those kinds of households. They're drawn away from a whole range of employment opportunities in some cases, long commutes that are tough when you become a parent. So, yeah, I don't think it's simple by any means, Lee.
Barbara Pocock, it's such an enormous and importantly enormous issue for us all. Thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.